Welcome to Song Creating on Radio St. Pete Sunshine 96.7 FM. Join us as we celebrate the sparks that ignite, the events that inspire, and the songwriters that create. With your host, Steve Robb.
My guest, Rick Todd, earned his chops playing rockabilly, roots rock and roll, blues and ska in small town bars, roadhouses, county fairs, and biker rallies in the prairie towns of Nebraska, Kansas, and Colorado. Family and responsibilities led him into a career that kept his feet in the fields and the plains, but his heart remained with his past musical life, which he dusted off once again and is now back doing what he loves. So Rick Todd, welcome to Song Creating.
Thank you, Steve. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you. Is this what's considered flyover country where you
Exactly. You know, I call it the empty quarter because it's, you know, full of space and sky and, you know, fields of wheat and buffalo grass and little towns huddled in valleys. Yeah, it's flyover country.
But this is all the flatlands, the flatlands of Colorado. I'm trying to get my geography here. And I remember driving through Nebraska once years ago, and there were, I think I was in Colorado or in Nebraska, there were mesas that were popping up around. But you're talking about the flatlands of these states, right?
Yeah. But, you know, it's little more diverse than that. And you know, I don't want to paint it as a bleak place because, I truly love these landscapes and, it's been an endless source of inspiration to me. So, it's just something that most people haven't experienced.
Is it the sense of openness and just that, I mean, a claustrophobic person would probably love this because there's just all this open space.
Exactly. And whenever I go back east, or I lived in Montana for a while in the woods, and I would get just all kinds of claustrophobic and have to seek out either the top of a mountain or so. One time I even climbed up to the top of a tree, a la John Muir, and just to experience the sky. So it gets in your body, it gets in your blood, and sense of openness and possibility. And, you know, I think that's what people experienced when they came out here, you know, 150 years ago, that sense of possibility.
Possibility is an interesting word to use here. I've described college towns that way, or with potential, you know, the same kind of thing. What do you mean by possibility?
Well, I guess it's this sense that there's a certain amount of freedom in space that you can move through. You can move through space, and there aren't barriers between you and space. Now, of course, there are now. You know, there's fences and other things that hem people in. But you know that old Western song, "Don't fence me in." You know,
yeah.
He wants to go up. He wants to go up to the ridge where he can see as far as he can see.
Well, you know, there's always the proverbial guardrail on the road, you know, that keeps you in line. And there really aren't that many guardrails in the roads that at least I picture in my mind going through the straight roads that just cut right through the plains.
Yeah. And, you know, on this album, I wanted to give a sense of that. So I found a photographer who lives in Kansas named Sean Ramsey, who had just some, I could tell he just had a sense of that feeling of openness. And he had this wonderful picture of an abandoned railroad track in western Kansas receding into the distance with some ominous clouds. I said, oh man, I have to use that on the album. And he was kind enough to license that picture to me.
Now, this is your recent album. I know it's on your website, which we should let people know is ricktoddmusic.com. But there's let's see if I can I want to look that up here. Yes, right. So this album that you cut is called Diesel Town. We'll be talking about that the title song here in a little bit. But yes, that is a classic classic photo. And the horizon is so straight.
Yes. Right. And you don't know, sometimes you don't know when the sky begins and the earth ends. Up north, the Cheyenne Indians called it the blue vision, that indistinct point where earth meets sky.
Wow. Now, you grew up in Texas, though, right?
I grew up in Nebraska.
Oh, Nebraska.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've been in Texas for 25 years now.
Are you in the northwest quadrant of Texas?
Yeah, we're Amarillo's up in the panhandle. Physically, it wasn't a big change moving from Nebraska to Texas because it looked very familiar to me. And there's the same crops, you know, cattle, corn, sorghum, wheat. It felt very similar. And so what I would tell people is say, well, I'm just learning the Southern dialect of the High Plains in this move.
Got it.
But
okay.
I mean, culturally, it was a whole different thing, you know?
Yeah. So I want to ask you, the description of the music that you played back then and on your website, since we mentioned the website, there's a photo that appears across the top. It repeats across the top of a young man playing a Gibson Hummingbird. Now, is that you?
That's me. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I looked at that.
We were all young at one time.
Steve. It's great to have that picture though. When I first went to the website, I thought you were James Lee Baker, who I interviewed. He was one of my first guests on this podcast. Gave me your name, and I looked up the website. And said, "Is this some young kid I'm going to interview here?" And then I started reading. Go, no, I don't think so.
Okay.
But we all were young once, and so you were young, and you were playing out So, at what age was it that you were doing all this rockabilly and blues?
Well, it was after I did a bunch of rambling around. Lived in Montana, did my Thoreauian year in the woods, and bummed around on the East Coast for a while. I came back to Nebraska, and my brother, who is just an outstanding drummer, he had gotten together with a fellow who played bass named Jimmy Stewart, and so we started out as a trio. Then we connected with another high school buddy of mine and put together a band called Ricky and the Red Streaks, unknowing that Paul McCartney had used that name at some point in his career. He had used that name.
You mean that full name, Ricky and the Red Streaks?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wow.
So we didn't know it at the time.
I'm not aware of that history. So this was your 20s?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
It would have been the late 70s.
Yeah. Okay, you're giving your age away now. You know, people are doing the math. So I got to ask you, you played blues, you played rockabilly and ska.
Yeah.
And how did the ska go over in this part of the country?
Oh, man, like a lead balloon.
People probably wondered
they'd be dancing. We'd do a John Mellencamp song, and then we'd hit them with something David Lindley or something, and they would just fall apart, you know, on the dance floor. They just wouldn't know what to do.
Oh, that's so funny! All of a sudden, their steps are all wrong, and everybody's stumbling over each other. Oh, that's hysterical! I can't get enough of that music now. It just inspires me so much. It's so much fun. When you were in Montana, okay. So in all of the course of your meanderings here, did you did you find that what you were listening to and what you were playing, did it change? Like being in the woods, you tend to, I don't know, it's a different feeling. I know when I go to the woods, I get really, really acoustic-y as I play. And then if I'm hanging at the beach, I've got my ukulele out and it's a whole different thing. And did that have an effect on you?
No, not really. I was kind of in my own little world, and I'll tell you how much I was in my own little world. In 1973, I saw Bill Monroe, and I appreciated it. And there was a real active bluegrass scene in Lincoln, Nebraska at the time, and I had friends that played bluegrass, but it didn't really speak to me at the time. And now, mandolin is my main instrument, and I just, I look at guys like Billy Strings that are taking that music to just a cosmic level, and totally appreciate that. But at the time, it didn't speak to me. What did speak to me was in 1975, I heard a song on the radio and the DJ came, that's when they had album oriented radio back then. Sure. A DJ came on and said, yeah, that was Backstreets by Bruce Springsteen. And he'll be at the Music Box in Omaha on September 18th or whenever it was. And that song transported me to another place. Oh. I think a lot of people have musical experiences like that. And so for years after that, Bruce Springsteen was my inspiration and the impetus for putting a band together. Cause I went out and I bought Born to Run, and I was like an evangelist. I said, Log, you got to listen to this. You got to listen to this.
Well, I've got to mention the album Nebraska then to you, being from Nebraska. How did that, I mean, that's a whole different sound with him too. Did that change your feelings or inspire you in a different way?
I really appreciate it. I wasn't one of those who criticized that turn. I think it was a vital turn for him to do, a natural progression for the boss to do. And the fact that it was from Nebraska, that was just a little bonus. They told the story of Starkweather, because I remember my mother running outside and making us come in. We were outside playing. She ran out and she made us come in because Starkweather was on the loose. So that was a real personal connection to that album.
Wow. And for those who don't know, just explain who Richard Starkweather was.
He was a mass murderer who went on a killing rampage in Nebraska and Wyoming.
Was this the Tom Wolfe book, In Cold Blood? Or not Tom Wolfe, Truman Capote. Was In Cold Blood about the Starkweather murder, or was this a different?
I don't know.
Okay, but I do remember that. Anybody can look it up. Yeah, so he was out on the loose. Wow.
So anyway, that really kind of threw me into rock and roll, and who wouldn't want that, to want that Telecaster, and it was so relatable, because when Bruce came out on that stage in 1975, he had on a pair of Chuck Taylors and a pair of Levi's and a black t-shirt. And I looked down, I was wearing the exact same thing. Huh. So, immediately you go, oh, this guy. Yeah, he's one of me.
Yeah. It's the fashion spans from Nebraska to New Jersey. And, It's the working man's fashion. So what were you doing professionally at this time? Or was this your life, being in bands?
Well, I was floating around. My family had started to grow, and
Oh, you were married at the time and had kids.
A few years later, yeah. By the time we had started our band, yeah. So, I've just doing whatever I could to keep my head above water. The band, and we played a lot, and it put groceries on the table, and it was the margin of survival, I guess you might say.
Yeah. Did you have any, I'm picturing some of these country bars, you got any interesting experiences to relate to us about that?
We never played behind chicken wire, but,
do you wish you had a couple of times?
Yeah, we played a biker rally once in Cambridge, Nebraska. And there were several different clubs at this rally. And we did yeoman's duty. We played until about 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning. And it had started to rain for those last few songs. So we thought, well, we've given them their money's worth. So we said, thanks a lot, good night. And we started to tear down. And I looked over as we were tearing down, and there was a fellow crouched in front of our truck. And I walked over there, and it was a guy letting air out of our tire.
Jeez.
And so first I challenged him, and then when he stood up and I realized that he had a blade, I went into talking mode, gentle talking mode. Well, long story short, some other guys came over and got in an argument with him, and it turned into a classic barroom brawl.
Wow.
Amongst these clubs. And the last thing I saw in our rear view mirror was just a melee, and they had to have a summit to plaster over all the hard feelings
Oh my gosh.
They had to have a biker summit. So we survived that one. And
so what was the name of the band?
Skyotes. Yeah.
That was Skyotes.
Yeah. That was our band, the Skyotes. Yeah.
That's a pretty cool name, actually. Maybe we can Google that, the history of Skyotes and the Biker Summit. And
I don't think you'll find anything.
You're listening to Song Creating on Radio St. Pete, Sunshine 96.7 FM. So you ended up, you took a breather from the music side. Getting married, having kids, I guess that does lead to a little bit more responsibility. But you describe what you did.
Well, I did what everyone does when they reach an impasse where they don't know what to do. And that is, I went back to school. And went to graduate school, ended up with a PhD, and was lucky enough to get a job with the Agricultural Research Service of the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and put together a very interesting career there. And I studied the links between agriculture and climate change, studied, greenhouse gases like methane and nitrous oxide and how they're generated by agricultural practices. And it was quite a turnaround from rock and roll. But
did it keep you out in the field, or was it mostly in a lab or at a desk?
No, I was a field scientist. So your characterization is absolutely correct. It was working in the field. I could not be a lab rat. I had to be outside in the field. And
What is it about that music? There's just something when you hear music come out of there, or that is inspired by that, there's a certain feel to it. And I don't know how to describe it, except that it seems to have a lot of space.
Well, yeah, I think there's something to it. And the other thing that I noticed when I moved down here to Texas music had kind of been on the periphery of my consciousness. But when I got down here and really started listening to the music, and I started to really pay attention to classic Texas singer-songwriters like Townes Van Zandt and Guy Clark, mm-hmm. Jerry Jeff Walker, I realized, wow, this is an incredibly rich musical tradition here. And it's unlike any other, I think it's probably unlike any other in the country, though there are recognizable regional sounds, but that Texas singer-songwriter sound that encompasses so many roots influences really, really captivated me. And I really, oh my God, I had missed out on so much, but things happen to you in your life when you're ready for them to happen.
Yeah.
And I was open and ready to hear that. We were so taken with Texas music that I talked my wife into taking country western dance lessons. Because I wanted to experience that culture as much as I could, And you have this great music, and you see people, they're dancing and they're having a great time in the honky tonks and dance halls, and you go, man, I want to be a part of that.
So, but you weren't a country singer. You were not a country musician, at least by your description. Uh-uh. And where is that line? Where is that defining line? From country music to, or country and western to, honky tonk blues. I mean, there's always crossover there, but is there a distinctive sound that identifies one over the other? Is it the lap steel in the country music that all of a sudden gives it that feel?
Yeah, that's a good question. First of all, I think that those lines are really being blurred.
Oh, yeah.
Nashville really is good at that, So you have the rise of this bro country. And some people even argue that that's not even really country music,
Well, we don't have Southern rock anymore. So I think it sort of took over where Southern rock was.
Well, it all goes back to the roots of American music. You have music coming over from Europe, especially. You have, Scots Irish people who flooded into the country in the 1700s and ended up in the hinterlands. And then you have this incredible, incredible tradition from Africa, and it all met in the South and got stewed together. And so you got hillbilly music comes out of it, and the blues comes out of it, and out of the blues gave birth to a baby, and they called it rock and roll. And it's just really, it's reiterating the entire American experience. But it all goes back to those roots.
Yeah.
And I think whenever people draw on those roots, when they draw on the mother tongues, that inform this music, it's going to be powerful, and it's going to have some authenticity if they're coming at it with good intentions.
Yeah. I'm going to plug another podcast I've been listening to, the History of Rock and Roll in 500 Songs. And I should look up who the host of this is. It's brilliant. And it's about 160 different episodes, and they last, but they go back to, you know, the, and we're talking more rock and roll than country here, but it's a, it's just fascinating. As you say, one thing leads to another one, leads to another. And it's just incredible how much one thing leads to another. I mean, how, you know, it's some of these songs, the rock songs that we know, The Doors, Light My Fire, is inspired by John Coltrane, you know, part of that. And it's so much of that happens. And I just think it's fascinating. And unfortunately, it seems like we do categorize things some way. And I think, unfortunately or unfortunately, it has to happen so that you've got some way to describe things.
What genre does this music fit in?
Yeah.
And, you know, fortunately, there's kind of a catch-all now, and that's Americana music. So you can accommodate all kinds of these amalgams and syntheses of music under that category of Americana music.
Is that where you think you describe yourself now?
I think I fit really comfortably in that category. Yeah.
Well, the train's pulling, but nothing pulls out. The railroad bulls, watch them tear the depot down. Some clock clicks, a schedule I cannot see. The conductor grinds his watch into the ground. There's a timetable here, nobody's saying a fair deal charge. You best be paying, you're late on the rails. Nobody's staying around. All aboard for Diesel Town. From the grass of Wyoming to the steel of Chicago, the singing rails, they move your burning coal. From the Texas plains to the Puget Sound, prayers and songs, while the death white bomb cars roll. There's a timetable here, nobody's saying a fair deal charge. You best be paying, you're late on the rail. Nobody's staying around. All aboard for Diesel Town. Till late, fire's red glow, the humpback lights, they shine into the clouds. I listen to the screech and scream of the wheel beneath the dirty black diesel ground. Wide hand on the throttle, running out of control. The rails spin a web into my soul. I'm caught in a trap that surely must drag me down. All aboard for Diesel Town. 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 All aboard for Diesel Town.
Welcome back to Song Creating. We're here with Texas singer-songwriter Rick Todd. So, Rick, tell me how many instruments are you playing these days? And I don't mean how many guitars do you have, but how many different instruments are you playing?
Well, my main instrument is mandolin. I picked it up about 10 years ago, and it just fit me. I just fell into it. It made sense to me. I could just see.
Have you tried playing violin?
Well, that was my strategy. I was going to learn to play mandolin so that I could then transition to fiddle.
Yep.
But I don't know if you've ever picked up a fiddle, but it is a devilishly hard instrument to play.
It's the bowing that is just
I salute to anyone who can play fiddle. At a bluegrass jam, you know, I'm going to be heading down to Winfield, Kansas here in a few weeks. When the fiddler shows up, that's when the music starts. You know?
Yeah.
So I didn't make the transition. I got stuck at mandolin, and I'm glad I did. I love that instrument. But I play guitar, and on this album, I play acoustic and electric guitars. I play button accordion. Which if you've ever seen a Tejano band or are familiar with Flaco Jimenez, you've seen the button accordion.
Well, I think I may also see them in an Irish bar, right?
That's right. That's right. Yeah. 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 Yeah, it's a little different configuration, but there are,
I don't know how many different kinds of squeeze boxes. So I guess if they all fit into that, call it a squeeze box category, the full size accordions are incredibly complicated. But this sounds like it's something a little bit easier to figure out, a shorter learning curve.
I actually started out playing concertina because I wanted to play Irish music. Mm. So I started out playing concertina. And then when you're down here in Texas, you start catching the Tejano sound. And
I see.
So I jumped on the three row button accordion, which is the instrument that's used in Tejano music. And I played bass, did all the bass parts on the album. But I reached a point toward the end of production where it just needed a little more spice. So I called on some friends, Matt Dwyer and Dan Rankins from Nebraska and Oklahoma respectively. Twice a year we do a long weekend jam here, bluegrass jam, and they came down and I recorded them playing dobro and pedal steel, and
was able to
incorporate that into three of the songs on the album, And oh man, it just, yeah, it was just wonderful. Took the sound just to where I wanted it to go.
Yeah. That's when I tried taking violin lessons. I, after about three or four of them, and I came to the same conclusion you did. And I looked on the wall and there was a dobro. I said, what's that? And started learning to play that. And it's just, I'm not good at it, but when I add it to a track, it just opens things up. It just adds a whole new texture. And it's a very different instrument than the lap steel or the pedal steel.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I like that word you use, texture, because this is, I'd go to jams or song swaps, and there'd be like eight guitars, and it was just a cacophony of guitars, which, you know, you've heard of a murder of crows, I guess, they're a cacophony of guitars, maybe. And that's when I picked up the mandolin, because it added, your word, it added texture, and the dobro does the same, and it just helps to make everything a little more musical, I think.
Well, and I play a little mandolin too, and in our jams, I'm the same thought as you. I'll bring the mandolin and bring the dobro, and I know I'm not playing as well as I would be playing if I were playing my guitar with everybody else. But I'm not there to play well. I'm there to just add something, and harmonica too. I think it opens up your whole musical education when you start playing things like that, playing more instruments like that.
And texture was kind of what I was playing with, or I guess, you know, to throw another analogy in here, you know, different colors, you know, if you want to use a painter analogy, you want to use different colors, different textures, different feels, so that it keeps the music fresh. And or it may, a certain instrument may really define the song. I had a song that I'd written about my musical partner Mick McLaughlin called "It's the Breath," and it was a very important song to me because Mick passed in 1998, and his spirit was really what was guiding me through this whole project. And he was a master at the lap steel guitar, a la David Lindley. Mm-hmm. And luckily, so is my son. So when I had this song about Mick, I was able to get my son Nate to add that lap steel, and it just made the song. It just made the song.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned the color. I call it a sports analogy, color commentary. Add a little color commentary to the song. So let's talk about this song "Diesel Town" and where it fits into your life. And I'm not sure how recently this was recorded, but give us the story of this song.
Well, your instructions were to find something that was very personal. And as I looked over the songs on the album, I thought, you know what? I think this one probably is. But it also happens to be the oldest song. This song, I wrote this song back in the late 80s.
You know, that's great, because I've some guests want to plug the, you know, this new song that they've got. I go, you can go back as far as you want. So, and the timelessness of this kind of music is mm-hmm. what you're demonstrating right there. So, wow. All right, keep going. Didn't mean to interrupt that.
And of course, we rocked it up. So I had to rethink the song, reimagine it to fit in with where I was musically now. And so I had kind of developed an acoustic version that I did in my used in my solo act. And as I started to record it, you know, these little elements of rock and roll started creep back into it. So it's probably one of the more upbeat songs on the album, and has, you know, this kind of, I call it a bonanza guitar. Remember the old riff, the bonanza, you know, which is, you know, classic Western deal. So I threw in some bonanza guitar. And
so what inspired the song?
Well, I come from North Platte, Nebraska. North Platte is a railroad town. It's a company town. The railroad, Union Pacific Railroad, Uncle Pete, they call it. Uncle Pete dominates the economy. And when people got out of high school, most of them just assumed they were going to get a job on the railroad. And so many, many people that I went to high school with did just that. And it can be a pretty decent job, but it's also a job that, I mean, Uncle Pete owns you. Mm. So there's this trade-off that you make between security and freedom. You know, which is a, you know, that's a classic trade-off. That's that, you know, we debate nationally. But here it was played out in this little one company railroad town in the middle of Nebraska. So I had to, I wanted to, get that, set that, those terms right off the bat. So the first line of that song is, the trains pull in, but nothing pulls out. So right away, it's a song about being trapped.
Yeah.
Trains pull in, but nothing pulls out. And it took off from there. It took off from there. And in this production, I just wanted to make it chug, you know, just chug, chug, chug.
Yeah.
In a relentless kind of way.
You've got the classic train beat drum going through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, of course,
which seems totally appropriate.
Yeah, and throw in the harmonic, you know, the Waylon train harmonica.
Yeah,
got to be in there. And the railroad was also my connection between. My very first connection between Texas and Nebraska, my home, because I worked for a volunteered with a group called Ground Zero during the 80s when we were really active in the No Nukes movement. And I was a spotter, which means that we had spotters all over the country, and we followed the what's called the white train. The white train was the train that carried nuclear warheads from the Pantex plant in Amarillo, Texas, to the nuclear submarine base in Bangor, Washington.
That's a long way.
Yeah, yeah. So from the moment they left the gates at Pantex, that train was tracked so that we could organize actions and protests along the route. And my assignment was a place called O'Fallon's Switch, about 18 miles, 20 miles west of North Platte, where I would sit and watch for the white train and see which way it went, whether it went along the main line of the Union Pacific Railroad or whether it went on the river road up north, northwest. So that was my main connect. My first connection with Amarillo, Texas, was through the white train. Yeah, prayers and songs while the death white bomb cars roll. is the line in the song.
Was that car actually white?
It was actually white. Yeah.
It's like they weren't trying to hide it, were they?
No, huh? It was very sinister too, because at night it had these, you know, the light inside was red. And so it had these gun slits or something. And you see these, just these red. Yeah, it was.
Yeah. And you referenced that as well, the red light. Mm.
Well, you know, I think maybe the key line is the rails spin a web into my soul.
Uh huh.
This, if you're working for Uncle Pete, if you're working on the railroad, you have that sense of being trapped. But later in the song, I expand it to show that we as Americans on a national scale, we were also trapped in that network of that web of railroads and what they did, whether they're moving coal to power plants that spew carbon dioxide into the air, or whether they're moving nuclear bombs to submarines. You know, it's a web that impacts you, you know.
Yeah.
If you're aware of it.
Or yeah. Even
if you're not aware of it, but
I thought the No Nukes movement was more about nuclear power, but yet I was not aware at all of this this transportation of nuclear weapons across the country. And every town that this went through, I mean, were people aware of it, or was this something that...
We would have... There were like five of us that were out on the tracks in North Platte. So it wasn't a big thing until you got to the big population areas. You see, that was their ploy, was to send it through the hinterlands, to send the bombs through the empty quarter.
Yeah.
So people wouldn't protest, you know.
Right.
But we were determined to bear witness to that was happening.
Yeah. They weren't going to send those bombs to the naval base in San Diego.
No, huh?
Puget Sound is much further out of the way.
Yeah. They didn't want it to go through Denver or any or a big city, you know.
Your original method of playing this, I guess, was solo and acoustic. Kind of conjures up a Pete Seeger type of song with the subject matter and just the acoustic guitar and the voice. Did the message resonate differently between now or at the way you played it that way and this more recent recording?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I tend to not be too, or I try to be not preachy in songs. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to leave enough ambiguity that people are curious and want to look deeper. And with all due respect for Pete Seeger, I prefer to leave some doubt in songs, you know, and leave some holes that the listener can hang their own story on. So maybe you come from a railroad town. Maybe you didn't work on the railroad, but maybe you were the person that didn't have that good railroad job, but you were the service job that paid, you know, a tenth of what the guys on the railroad were making. You didn't have that fine pickup. You didn't have a boat. You know, you didn't have a fishing boat. So, you know, I like to leave those hooks in there.
Did you perform this for your old friends who were at the time working for the railroad?
Oh yeah, yeah.
And how did they take it?
You know, most of them will admit, you know, oh yeah, killed my marriage, you know, or I missed my kids' graduation, or I missed that recital, or I missed the little league game,
I guess working for the railroad didn't mean you were staying put. You were on the trains, moving back and forth.
Yeah, a lot of the guys, uh-huh. A lot of guys were on the road crews, it stove them up because they're killed their backs, So there was most of my buddies will admit, yeah, it gave us a good life, but it took a lot away from us too.
Is North Platte still a railroad town?
Yeah, it is. It is.
I mean, the railroads are still certainly a big part of commerce.
It's a kind of a bleak place now. It doesn't have a real vibrant feel to it. The vibe is a little methy right now. And there's another town about 100 miles from North Platte called Kearney. And Kearney has grown. They were the same size 40 years ago, but now Kearney's probably has 10,000-15,000 more people than North Platte. Vibrant people like moving there. While North Platte is just hard luck down on its back on its heels. So think of towns in the Rust Belt, that were one company towns.
Yeah.
Maybe they were dependent on the car industry, the steel industry. And they're on hard times, And there's a hard time town in North Platte, and there's a we're making it pretty darn good town. And they coexist side by side.
Both affected or both working for the railroad, or they just have different job levels in the railroad industry, or are they completely different?
Yeah, well, they're completely different. You have the guys, the men and women that work on the railroad and take home a pretty good salary, and then you have the rest of the folks. Yeah.
Oh, I see. So the ones who work on the railroad are the ones doing better.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, Uncle Pete pays you for your time. He pays you for your life.
Yeah, I guess so. Wow. So what gave you the impetus to escape that?
That's a good question. I think, it's just early on, I guess I was aware that there were alternatives.
Had you already been traveling and with your band touring around at this time?
I was just kind of a nerdy bookie kind of kid. So I just kind of fell haphazardly in that direction.
Well, all right. So what are you doing now? You live in Amarillo?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Amarillo, Texas.
Amarillo, Texas. Yeah.
You got a recording studio there?
Yeah. It doubles as my wife's greenhouse. And I did the album here, right here in my little room. It's about 15 by 15.
Are you out performing now?
Yeah. Yeah. Just enough to keep me happy. And what's really good about this stage of my life is, my list of I don't give a, is getting longer by the day. So I play when I want and I play what I want. And my mission is to bring these songs to people. And if they like them, and some do, that's great. And if they don't, that's okay too.
Yeah.
That's okay too. But what's important is that the songs get played. And that's kind of the basis of that song I wrote about Mick McLaughlin, my music partner. It's the breath. The whole premise of that song is songs must live in the air. You don't write a song to have it sit on a hard drive.
Yeah.
or play to four walls or your dog. Now, I'm not right. criticizing those things. If that's what makes you happy, hey, that's great. I think that's great. I'm a advocate of guitar therapy. That's perfectly valid. But I just think that my songs need to live in the air. And that's why I made the album, and that's why I perform them every chance I get. And let them breathe, let them vibrate air, move through the world, and that's where I'm at right now.
Well, I would love to use those words as our final word, but I really want to ask you, I'm not done yet. What's the music scene like in Amarillo?
Yeah, it's really vibrant. It's really vibrant. There's a lot of bands. There's a lot of singer-songwriters that span just a wide, diverse set of genres. And
a lot of live music in the bars still?
Yeah. It's really a cool scene. And what I like about the scene, at least my little part of the neighborhood, is that musicians are really supportive of each other. And there may not even be set bands, but you have this changing cast of musicians that support each other. And this musician needs a bass player, so this person will go play bass with them, and I might need to have a guitar player one night, or just a buddy of mine's free, he'll come and sit in and play. And it's really an open, collaborative, cooperative scene. That's really good to see.
Wow. That sounds great. I would love to make a trip there. That's a part of the country I haven't seen. I've been to Texas a few times, but not that area. And I think you're not far from the Oklahoma Panhandle too, right? Up in that way.
Yeah.
Well, I hope to get out there one of these days. There's see that open sky. And maybe a couple. You got armadillos in Amarillo, right?
You got a place to stay.
Oh, thank you. You got armadillos in Amarillo, right?
Not quite.
Oh, no? Is that not armadillo country?
They're getting closer. They're getting closer. You know, as the planet warms up, it's going to become an armadillo planet. You know.
Oh, is it? Are they moving northward?
They are moving. Right? They are moving north. You know what?
I don't know. You got to have a song. The armadillos in Amarillo. It's got a ring to it.
Someday.
You heard it here first. All right. Rick Todd, thank you. This is really enlightening, and I really enjoyed talking to you.
Hey, I really enjoyed our conversation too, Steve. And thanks for all the good work you do at promoting music and songwriting and song crafting. And I'm sure all musicians. Oh, and I want to shout out to James Lee Baker too. For getting us together, and someone who I really respect as, you know, just an amazing musician. And
terrific guy too.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, Rick. Thanks very much.
Okay. All right.
Take care. Bye-bye. Thanks for listening to Song Creating on Radio St. Pete. If you like what you hear, you can find Song Creating on your favorite podcast app or at songcreating.com. To check out my own music, go to steverobb.com. And until next time, keep a song in your head and music in your heart. Thanks for listening.